All right, well, good morning. Glad you guys are here. You may not be awake. I don't understand time change. I don't understand it at all. And why can't we just do it on Saturday? You know, just like whatever, some other time, some lesser important time. But anyway, we're glad you're here. We're very glad you're here. If you're new to Living Vine, I want to especially thank you for being here. We really believe God's doing some really special stuff out here. He's doing it in us, through us, and with us, and for us, and we're glad you're here, and we hope today you walk away feeling that same way. Now, I want to ask you a dangerous question. It's time for a dangerous question, okay? I've been waiting for this one. Are you hungry? Are you hungry? That is a dangerous question for a pastor to ask at this time of day. I felt like, because I'm about food today, so I feel like I should have some snacks. Like, just every now and then, ask a good question, toss out some bonus food, some snacks. Are you hungry? Are you? Okay, great. Well, let's go to the last page of my notes. No, I'm kidding. All right, well, let's get into this. Now, hunger is really one of the most fundamental things we all have in common, right? It is an equalizer. It is a level playing field. It doesn't matter who you are. You are going to get hungry. Sometime today, if not already, you are going to get hungry. And there's only one solution to that, right? You eat and you don't get hungry. You eat and you live. You don't eat and you don't live. That's just how simple it is. It's amazing how much our life is planned around this fundamental need for food. Food does not take a vacation, does it? You can take a vacation with your family, and then you realize, oh, they still want to eat. The kitchen's still open. Yeah, we really, vacation is all about just changing locations between meals. It's just, that's it. That's how much our life revolves around this. And then there's this whole little code I've learned recently about when to make a decision and when you might be making a bad decision. It's real simple. You can remember this. Are you hungry? Angry? Lonely or tired? If you say yes to any of those, be careful what you do next, right? Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. If you're hungry and angry, what is that? Hangry. We all know this. Hangry happens around our house quite frequently, kind of around dinner time, right? And what happens when you're hangry, when they are hangry? Productivity goes down. Conflict goes up, right? Am I right? Everybody starts they lose their minds, right? And you're like, it's okay, we're about to feed you. But what's crazy is, I'm not hungry. Oh, you're not hungry? I'm not hungry. No, now listen to you. You're showing all the signs of hunger right now. Right now, you're not listening. You have no motivation. You're not focused. You are moody, tired, cranky, somewhat demonic. Like, we're about to call the pastors. Don't worry, your life group leaders have been trained. They can handle it at any time. You call them first, we'll back them up.
So good.
All right. Hunger is universal. Needing food is something we really can't live without, right? Hunger is one of the worst things someone could possibly experience. If you really are experiencing hunger and you don't have a solution, it does begin to break you down emotionally, then mentally, and then physically, until your body literally shuts down. I've seen this firsthand. It's devastating. Spiritual hunger is even more devastating. We've all probably experienced this. The stakes are really high. You have seen it in your life. Your life has broken down in some way, shape, or form. Lives around you, people you love, you trust, you depend on, you count on, their lives have broken down somewhere along the way because they have a spiritual hunger and they are trying to satisfy it with something or someone else that just can't satisfy it. You've seen this breakdown. Essentially, food is to the stomach what Jesus is to our souls. So today, in the Gospel of John, we are going to see how Jesus satisfies this deep spiritual hunger we all have. Now, when I was a freshman in high school, several of us wanted to go backpacking. So we looked at our young life leader to say, hey, George, where should we go? What should we do? Well, George, man, oh, George starts going on and on, man. Like, I mean, I'm going to get a badge here if I listen to all this. I mean, like, what to bring, how to pack up, what to do. I mean, this is going on and on. And then he starts giving us directions. It's like hours away. It's like so many turns. I'm just like, what? All I remember is, watch out, the abandoned house before you make that turn. Everybody's gone. The dog hasn't realized it yet. He's still there. He will jump out at you. Okay, so that's all I remember. But I am listening to all of this, and he looks up, and we're all cross-eyed. I mean, it's been minutes. We're like, what are you saying? And he just stops. He's like, I tell you what. What are you guys doing this weekend? We're like, let's go. He's like, how about I go with you? I'll take you. I will go with you. And you know, in reality, what George was saying, without saying it, was, I don't just have what you need. I am who you need. And he was exactly right. I mean, one of the guys packed a six-pack of Mellow Yellow, okay? Without George, we would not have made it, okay? He's like, I've got what you need, and I am who you need. Now, Jesus is God. He's come in the flesh. He's entered our lives, and he's entered the journey of our lives at one of our greatest points of need. And he's saying the same thing. I have what you need. More importantly, I am who you need. I'm not just what you need. I am who you need. Now, some of you are going to fade because you're going to be hungry. I'm losing you already. You're somewhere else. So hear this now. Hear this now. Some of you specifically just need to hear this simple message. Jesus is exactly what you need, and he's exactly who you need right now where you are in your life. You have come and parked. You've come into this building. God knows every story in this place. He knows where your heart is. He knows where your mind is. He knows where your trouble is. He knows where you are with work, with family, at home, in your marriage. He knows everything about you, and he's here to tell you today, I'm exactly what you need. Where you are, I will be with you. I am who you need. I am what you need. Now, he knows your storms. He knows your pain. He knows your suffering. He knows exactly where you are right now. And he says, I am exactly who you need. Now, when we hear the word I am or the phrase I am, we go back to the book of Exodus, right? Because where Moses meets God at the burning bush, God identifies himself as I am, right? God says to Moses, hey, Israel, I want you to get Israel out of Egypt. I'm going to help you, but I need you to take Israel. They've been captive for 400 or so years, something like that, and they are being held captive by the greatest empire of that time, the Egyptians. And I want you to help me get them out of there. He's like, okay. All right. Well, let's say I do this. And this is Exodus 3:13. He's like, okay, if I do this, now you guys are familiar with this. If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask, well, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Now, that's important. I mean, my dad everybody knew my dad around town and really around all the areas around that town. And I took advantage of that. If I wanted a bank loan, I would just go in and say, my dad's Ed North. Done. If I got pulled over, most of the time, I could say, hey, you're Ed North? Yes. Now, that doesn't work in other states. So that's limited, but you know, the opposite's true. When Frank says, tell them Frank sent you, and then you realize you get there, they charge you double. You're like, I better not say Frank sent me ever again. So like Moses is kind of wanting to know, hey, who am I saying is sending me? And God says to Moses, I am who I am. And when I hear that, I feel like thunder in my chest. I feel like it's just like, boom, God just like, man, I feel it. I am who I am. Who says that? Well, God says that. He says, tell the people I am sent me to you. I am. Moses, I am. I am not like you, Moses. I don't come from anywhere. I don't have a beginning. I don't have an end. I actually don't depend on anyone. I am self-sufficient, which is kind of the guy you want when you're going through the wilderness, right? So he's like, whatever your journey is, Whatever your need is on that journey, whatever you lack, Moses, whatever Israel lacks, I am. Problem solved. Now, Jesus comes on the scene, and he takes this, and he shapes seven stories or seven conversations around this I am idea, and that's the series we're going through in the Gospel of John. And when Jesus says I am, he's also making the same claim. He's claiming to be God. He's claiming to actually be the God that was with them in Israel. He's claiming to be what they need and who they need. He's like, I am your missing piece. I am exactly what you've been looking for. I am what you need. And so today he says, hey, I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life. Hunger is our most basic need. Bread is a universal sign that hunger will be taken care of, right? Our relationship with Jesus is to our soul what bread is to our body. Sorry, I don't have a gluten-free option on that illustration. But now to understand this a little bit more before we get into the text that Heather read, let's go to John 6, verse 4. Okay, to really understand the setup here, we need to go to this story. Now, you guys are familiar with this story. Most of you, if not all of you, are familiar with this story. Now, it's key here in the first verse 4 of John 6. It says, now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. That's really important, okay? Now, the Passover, in simple, is a meal that Israelites, all of Israel, celebrated every year. And that Passover meal represented the meal they had the night before they were delivered out of Egypt, out of slavery. So this meal represents, hey, God, look at, and they retell the story. They have the meal and they retell the story every year. Remember what God has done. Remember how God has delivered us. Remember what he did. And so that is happening right now at this time in this scene that is taking place. They are retelling this story. They are remembering how God delivered them, how God provided for them. So Jesus is on the scene. There's a crowd. We know this story, right? He looks at the crowd. He's like, oh, man, they're hungry. Maybe he asked like I asked you. He's like, are you hungry? They all said yes. Okay, he looks at Philip, and he's going to test Philip. He said, Philip, what are we going to do about this? Where are we going to buy bread? Now, Philip is like, where are we going to buy bread? Now, here it says 5,000. So 5,000 really is like 5,000 family units, okay? Like, so it could really be upwards of, like, if based on our family units, it could be like 20 or 30,000 people. I don't know. It was several thousand people. And he's like, Philip, where are we going to buy the bread? He's like, there's no way. There's no way. This is like, what, 200 denarii? This is like 8-10 months of work. I mean, by the time we made enough money to pay for this bread, well, they would not be here. They would not be here. So basically, Jesus is trying to point this out. Like, is this possible? Is it possible for you to do this? No, there's no way. There's no way this can happen. Well, we know the story, right? There were 5 loaves. There were 2 fish. They started passing it out. They pass it out. They pass it out. Everybody has their fill. They have more than enough. Then they have leftovers. They have 12 baskets of leftovers. Now, again, remember, this is happening during the time of the Passover. They're celebrating what God did for Israel when he delivered them out of Egypt. 12 baskets, 12 tribes in Israel. And all of a sudden, things start clicking for people. Okay? They are saying, hey, wait, hold on. See, Moses delivered Israel when they were under Egyptian oppression. Manna fell from heaven every day for them in the wilderness. Bread literally fell from heaven and provided for them. Now we've got this guy. He's come on the scene. He's been preaching and speaking like nobody else. He's been performing miracles. And now he has fed us miraculously, something that we all thought was impossible. A new bread has come down, right? He has fed us. So if he can do that, we're under Roman oppression. Whoa. Now the lights are clicking. They're coming on. What happens if this is our guy? If he can do this, he can deliver us out of Roman oppression and we could be free, right? That's what they're thinking. And so when the light clicks on, this is verse 14, when the people saw the sign, and this is clearly a sign, provision from God, bread for the multitudes during the time of Passover with 12 baskets, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 baskets left over. When they saw the sign, what he had done, they said, this indeed is the prophet who has come to the world, who has come into the world. And now Jesus knew what their intentions were. Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain. They want to make him king because they want their stomachs filled and they want to be free from Rome, right? And Jesus is like, that's not what I'm here for. That's not what I've come to do. There's a kingdom in your heart that I need to free you from. That's the kingdom I've come for. So he withdraws to the mountain. Let me ask you, simple question. What's it like for you when you start thinking, Jesus, what could you do for me in this particular situation? It could be just this simple. Jesus, if you would do this, fill in the blank. Jesus, if you would do this, my life would look like this. I actually want you to take a minute. What does that picture look like for you? Jesus, if you would do this for me, my life would look like this. You may have come in already with that in your mind. If you would do this, my life would look like this. My marriage would look like this. My work would look like this. My finances would look like this. Keep that in your head. I've got one too. Sometimes I get mixed up, my wants and my needs, right? But not only that simple question right there leads me chasing after Jesus for what I think I can get out of him, what I think he can do, not necessarily what he came to do. That's exactly where these people are. That's exactly what they're thinking. Now, let's get back to the story. We're going to get back into what Heather read here in John chapter 6. Now, I'm going to kind of connect some dots. Basically, in general, a few things have happened, and now Jesus is on the other side of the sea, and people have pursued him. He wasn't where they thought they would be. They got in boats. They came after him. They're looking for him, and they find him. So in verse 24, it says, so when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into boats, went to Capernaum, and seeking Jesus. That's good. They're seeking Jesus, but why are they seeking Jesus? Because they have been asking this question in their own mind. Jesus, if you could do this, life would look like this. And Jesus knows this. When they had found him on the other side, they said to him, Rabbi, where did you come from? Because he kind of disappeared, then he walked on water, got in a boat, and zipped over. So, I mean, anyway, that's a different story. We'll save that. Got to save some of them, right? Okay, but here's what's important. They call him Rabbi. Now, also, in context, you have to get down to verse 59, which we won't get to. But 59 says that they're in a synagogue. So that might be the reason they called him Rabbi. But at this point in our story, he's been called prophet. They've wanted him to be king, and now they're calling him rabbi. They're still trying to figure out who this guy is, right? And Jesus is happy with that. He's like, I'm here to show you. So Jesus answered them, Truly, I say to you, you're asking me, not because you saw signs, but because I filled your stomachs, because you had your loaves filled in your belly. And then verse 27, he says, do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life. Jesus is shifting now. Now, bread doesn't last long, does it? Bread doesn't last long. In fact, when you eat bread, it doesn't necessarily last long. Probably, it's been overnight now. They're probably thinking, yep, I'm ready for another meal. They're not used to anything staying for long. And when Jesus says, now, there is something, this will perish, But there is something that won't. There is something that endures for eternity. There's something that will last. That's got to pique their curiosity, their interest. Jesus has just made the shift from physical to spiritual, from things that perish now to eternal, things that are going to last. What are you talking about? And he says, the Son of Man will give it to you. Well, what must we do to be doing the works of God? That's a common question. That's a common thought you have. Jesus, if you would do this, life would look like this. What do I need to help you with to make that happen? What do I need to do to help you do what I want you to do? Right? That's kind of something that maybe that's just me. I'm just sharing. It's a free counseling session, right? You're not going to charge me for this. Anyway, so he's like, okay, what's the work? What should we be doing? And Jesus answers, okay, you want to know the work? Now, here's some of you, I'm not, but some of you have the, okay, checklist. I'm ready. Give me the checklist. What do I need to do? I'm ready. I am ready to do the work. And he says, believe in him who was sent. That's the work. The work is to believe. That's it. Believe in you is basically, do you want me to believe in you? Now, what do they come back with? It sounds pretty simple. Just believe. I'm to believe in you. But immediately they're like, okay, well, all right. What you got for us? You know, hey, this is common. I don't know you. You don't know me. You apply for a job, and I'm like, who are you, and what do you bring to the table? Now, keep in mind, though, Jesus has been performing miracles nonstop. He's not only fed one multitude, but another multitude. He's healed some people. So he's like, are you kidding me? You got, like, what else do I, what other sign do you need? But then they go on. They say, see, our fathers, they ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. In other words, he's like, okay, again, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do, Jesus? What are you going to do for me? What do you got for us? And they're kind of thinking, like, maybe a little bit more meal, but come on, what are you going to show us to make us think that we should believe in you? Well, the truth is, if these miracles haven't done it, if this hasn't been enough, it's never going to be enough, right? But he says, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. Now, I like how Eugene Peterson says this in The Message. He says, Jesus responded, he says, the real significance of that scripture is not that Moses gave you bread from heaven, but that my Father is right now offering you bread from heaven, the real bread. Oh, what? Whoa. The bread of heaven came down out of heaven and is giving life to the world. Now, at this point, they're like, okay, I got to have that. They say to him, sir, give us this bread always. Always. Man, I want that. I am in. That sounds like the best thing on the menu. I want that. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall not thirst. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. You've got deeper problems than Roman oppression or your empty stomach. Your soul is starving. Food in your belly won't solve this. Freeing you from Roman oppression will not solve this. So again, I ask you this question. Are you hungry? More importantly, what are you hungry for? What are you hungry for? A couple years ago, John Mark Comer, pastor on the West Coast, was interviewed in a podcast, and I wrote it down. I don't know who gets credit for this. One of his professors said this, though. Your strongest desire may not be your deepest desire. Let me say that again. Your strongest desire may not be your deepest desire. And what Jesus is saying here is, you've got strong desires here. That's why you want me king. That's why you want me to do this. But I'm here for your deepest desire. Because when your deepest desire is fulfilled, you will actually experience real satisfaction. I am here not for your strongest desire, but for your deepest desire. And when you're just going after and craving your strongest desires and hoping they will be filled, here's what one writer says, you are like hungry ghosts, ravished creatures who have scrawny necks, small mouths, emaciated limbs, large, bloated, empty bellies. Now, I'm not going to do another zombie illustration. Let me say that again. Hungry ghosts, ravished creatures, scrawny necks, small mouths, emaciated limbs, large, bloated, empty bellies, who cope with their inner turmoil by gorging on anything they think will fill their soul. Or as I might say, I want a cookie, but I should probably have two. It's just never enough, and it won't satisfy. Hey, you got teenage boys in the house? They will eat. I remember my dad saying, he will eat you out of house and home, and I'm like, what does he mean? And now I know. It just, they're never satisfied. Hungry ghosts, ravishing creatures, gorging on anything that will satisfy them until they have the bread of life, until you have the bread of life. Your strongest desires may be satisfied, but you are not satisfied until your deepest desire is satisfied. I am the bread of life. Sometimes that's hard to see, because our strong desires, they're not necessarily sometimes bad things, right? We have a desire for justice, right? That's not a bad thing, but you see it all everywhere. You just want justice everywhere. How will this ever be solved? Do you want justice? Maybe you want a better life for your kids than you had. Success at work. You want. You don't want to struggle with your finances. You want people to look up to you. You want to fix everybody. You want to be the solution to other people's problems. You have strong desires. We all have strong desires. Maybe you're fixated on health. Man, I know what endorphins feel like. I remember those days. You know, the runner's high, the climber's high, the cycling high, fly fishing high, motorcycle high. The need for speed is real, y'all. I know what that's like. I have had strong desires, and there are strong desires at much, much darker places. Much darker places than that, right? What is your strong desire right now? A.W. Tozer said, the reason why many are still troubled, still seeking, still making little forward progress is because they haven't yet come to the end of themselves. We are still trying to give orders and interfering with God's work within us. That's what those strong desires do. They give us an illusion that we are still making orders. We're calling the shots. We're still thinking, Jesus, if you'll just do this, you'll do that, then this thing will happen. Life will be like this. We're still trying to call the shots. And life would look different if those things happened. But you still might be hungry. That's what Jesus is saying. Are you hungry today? Hear these words. They're God. They're the words of Jesus. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Hear that again. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall not thirst. I am the bread of life. I am who you're looking for. I am what you're looking for. When you find me, you've got everything you need. Now you're saying, oh, Jonathan, that sounds too good to be true. Like the list you made was kind of a, God, that was a nice list. I've got a restless spirit. I got some dark things in my life right now. I'm struggling. You know, I don't think this is possible to just have this meal and my life be changed. Well, what did Philip say to Jesus when he said, hey, how are we going to feed these people? Oh, it's impossible. We can't do this. We can't do this. There's no way. There's no way to feed all these people, Jesus. It's impossible. You might be thinking that way right now. You might be hearing, oh, yeah, I've heard this before. This is too good to be true, but you don't know my life. You don't know my life, Jonathan. I like how Anne Lamott puts it. Trying to get all your desires under control is like putting an octopus to bed. Can you imagine trying to put an octopus to bed? I mean, I'm broken here. I'm angry here. I'm ashamed over here. I'm not ashamed over here. I should be ashamed. Now I'm feeling bad about not being ashamed. I mean, it's how are we going to tuck this octopus into the bed? I mean, really? Jesus says, it's possible. It is truly, truly possible. You think you're different than everybody else in this room? No way. But you think Jesus doesn't have exactly what you need? He absolutely does. Now let me ask you, let's go back to this food thing, because I know maybe you are hungry by now. What's your favorite meal? Think about this. Please don't say it out loud. I'm starting to get hungry. What is your favorite meal? I mean, when you know this meal is going to happen tonight, you start thinking about it, right? You start thinking about it during the day. If you're going out that night, we do this occasionally, and I'm like, man, I'm ready. I know exactly what I'm going to order. And just even thinking about it puts a smile on my face. But those glands, I don't know science, but you know, that stuff starts happening. You start thinking it, but you can almost taste it in your mouth. Do you know what I'm talking about? You know, this is your favorite meal, right? And when we go into public, I have to behave myself. I don't want to scare people, because when this meal hits the table, I want to devour it. I mean, I'm like, watch out. Get out of the way. I'm with my wife. We've been married for 25 years. She doesn't care. I mean, just rip it apart. You think I'm making that up? Now, there are some of you, though, they want to take pictures of your meal. Some of you think we care about what you're eating. And I know you probably like, man, this is a special bit. I don't want to criticize. I just say I love you. I don't care. I don't pause. And why are you not just eating it right now? Why are you taking? It's a great. How do you take such good? I mean, look, this looks amazing, but what you should be doing is devouring this. And that's what Jesus is saying. A lot of us just want to take a picture and we say, hey, this is the meal. This is Jesus. Isn't this amazing? Isn't this what we're supposed to? Isn't this the right answer? Jesus is the right answer. I'm going to post about this. Anyway, the point is, it's not there for you to look at. It's there for you to devour. It's there for you to take full advantage of. It's there for you to find satisfaction at the deepest place possible. Jesus wants you to feast on him. And unless you feast on him, you will be hungry at the deepest level, at the root level, at your most base level. And what he's saying is, I can satisfy what you deeply desire. Now, there is a lot here, and we'll come back to John another day, and we'll go through this a little bit slower. It's kind of a lot of things he says about how to devour. Some things that might be confusing to you. But let's just get to verse 56, because this is one of my favorite verses in this whole text. You're like, wait, hold on, is that on a... Like, he says, feast on me. And this is what that looks like. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood. Now you're like, whoa. But listen to this. What happens? He abides in me, and I in him. Do you hear that? Jesus is saying, I am the bread of life. And he's pointing to what he's about to do. I am about to give my life. I'm about to give my body, my blood. I am about to share all of me with you, everything I've got. I'm going to put it on the cross. Trust that this is going to satisfy you. Trust that as you are examining your life and what you want and what you need and all the blanks you need filled, the cross will satisfy you. Jesus will satisfy you. But not only that, it says when you do this, when you feast on him, when you take full advantage of it, he says, I abide in you. And you abide in me. It's not just bread for life. It is bread for your life, for the life you're living. He wants to be with you, abide in you, with you, walk with you in your journey all the way into the wilderness of your life, into the areas of need in your life, into every area of your life, he's saying, I am with you in this journey from now all the way through and into the promised land for you. I am with you always. I just want to encourage you as we wrap up. So when they were celebrating Passover, they made unleavened bread. I don't have the recipe, but I'm just saying it was a simple bread. It was a flat bread. And the idea of the simple recipe, the simple bread, was it needed to be made in a hurry so they could get out of Egypt as fast as possible. Whenever the green light went green, they were out of there. So there wasn't a fancy meal being made. There wasn't time for the bread to rise. Unleavened bread to be eaten in a hurry, ready to escape whenever possible. Now, Jesus is the bread of life. He's the bread for your life. Wherever you are in life. I say this quite often when I'm counseling. Unless you're doing something really crazy, and we got to jump, sometimes you're in the fire, we got to pull you out of the fire. But other than that, I say this frequently, Jesus is not in a hurry. Jesus is really not in a hurry. There is not a hurry to the bread of life. He is with you every step of the way in your life. He wants you to experience him to the fullest. Manna came down from heaven, guess what? In the wilderness. When did it come down? Every day. Every day. Manna came down from heaven every day. Now, God had some very specific instructions about that manna. Sometimes, hey, you got to gather it like this. Don't gather it like this. Gather it on these days. Don't gather it on this day. Do you know what? They didn't get that figured out. Isn't that crazy? Like, wait, what? George, I need you back on the trip here. Tell me again what I'm supposed to do. No, they didn't do it right every day. They failed sometimes to really enjoy God's provision the way he wanted to give it. But guess what? The next day, manna came again. Manna fell again. And that is what God is saying. That is what Jesus is saying. When you experience the bread of life, when you are fully, truly satisfied, it's not because you got everything right. In fact, a lot of days, it's not because you got it right, right? He is still with you. He will be with you today. He will be with you tomorrow. He will be with you the day you get it figured out. He'll be with you the day you don't get it figured out. I am who you need. That's what Jesus is saying. I am who you need, I am what you need, and I am all you need. On your best day, when you're having the best day of your life, I am who you need, I am what you need, I am all you need. When you're having the worst day of your life, I am who you need, I am what you need, I am all you need. When you're in the valley, I am who you need. I am what you need, and I am all you need. When you're experiencing joy, remind yourself it is because he is who you need. He is what you need. He is all you need. When you are suffering, you can take comfort. He is who you need. He is what you need. He is all you need. He is with you always. He is abiding with you. He is in you. He is with you. He is for you. Nothing can separate you from this Jesus, this bread of life. That's what he has to offer you today. Would you stand with me? I'm just going to ask, do you have this bread? Have you heard this message today and you're thinking, I don't have the bread of life. I have never experienced this. This is new information to me. I am hearing about this Jesus for the first time. I want the bread of life. If that is you, we would love to pray with you after the service. I would love to pray with you. I would love to celebrate this. We would love to celebrate that with you today. Second question. Do you have the bread of life? But have you been on a different menu? Have you been feeding on something else that won't satisfy you? Have you been asking God to take care of your strong desires but not fulfill your deep desire? He is the bread of life for you today. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you for all you are, for all you've done, for who you are. God, that you satisfy our deepest desire. Lord, as we painted that picture of what we wanted you to do, would you enter the needs of our life right now? Would you enter at the point of need in our life and help us realize that that might not be exactly what you want for us, that you are exactly what we need in our life today. God, would we feast on you? Would we take full advantage? Would we disregard? Would we just say, thank you, Lord, for forgiving me? You may be running in shame. You may not think you deserve to be at the table. You may not feel like you deserve the best meal in the house, but that's not true. Don't let that lie keep you from feasting on Jesus and enjoying him today. Thank you, Lord. Thank you for coming. Thank you for giving yourself so that we could be satisfied at our deepest level of need. We love you. We love you so much. Amen.